Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Lamed Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. At the end of our previous Shiur, we were introduced to Shitas Rav regarding what would be a sign of Pirchus, that is a post-Shchita body movement on the part of an animal, demonstrating that the animal who was a Mesukenis, was a deathly ill animal, prior to the Shchita, died as a result of the Shchita and not as a result of its illness. So Rav listed a few different signs that if a Mesukenis, this deathly ill animal, demonstrates these signs, then it's a sign that it died as a result of the slaughtering, and hence will be kosher. One of the things that he mentioned was Kishkisha Ba'ozna, that it wiggled its ear. Shmuel now reacts to this. Omar Luhu, on the second line from the top of Lamiches, Omar Luhu, Shmuel reacts in wonderment and says, "It's Dericho Le La'abo La'azuze Uni." Abo is a name for Rav. It's a title of respect. And he says, does Rav require such a great sign as that? When we say a great sign, it means that for an animal, after it shechted, to continue wiggling its ear, that would be a sign of extreme life, let us say. And as such, we don't require such a massive demonstration of life after the Shechita. She'ani Omer, Shmuel presents his rule with regard to what would constitute a pirchus on the part of a Mesukenis. He says, Kol she'oise dvorim she'ein hamisa oise. Anything that an animal does that, in other words, there's a body movement that's not something characteristic of simple death meaning death without shechita, any sign that's not characteristic of simple or straightforward death, that would be pirchus, mai ninhu dvarim shamisa oisa. So what are things that misa does? In other words, what are things that if we see it, it would not be a sign of the shechita having killed it, but rather its own expiration as a result of its being sick? Omar Rav Onan, l'didi mifshal minei d'mar Shmuel. It was explained to me, says Rav Onan, on the part of Shmuel, hoisa yoda kfufa u'poshtesa. If the animal at the time of Shechita had, let us say, a folded-in foreleg, and after the Shechita, this foreleg became extended, that's poshtesa, that would be in the realm of dvorim shamisa oise. That's something that straightforward death accomplishes or enables to take place. And that, therefore, would not be a sign of, a sufficient sign of life to this animal to make the shechita acceptable. However, pshuta v'kofafa, if the animal happened to have had a leg that was a foreleg that was stretched out, and after the shechita it folded it in, that's dvorim she'ein hamisa oisa. That would be a sign of sufficient life to the animal, and as a result it had died as a result of the shechita, because that's not a movement that's characteristic of straightforward death. The Gemara asks, what do I need Shmuel to tell me this for? My komashmolon tanina. This has already been taught as part of a Tanaic source. The source having said, behemo daka sheposhto yodo, velo hichzira psula. A light sheep, a light cattle, that is sheep or goats, that's behema daka, sheposhto yoda, that stretched out its foreleg and didn't fold it back in, that's psula. In other words, a mesukenes that after shechita simply extended the foreleg and did not fold it back in, that is an unacceptable shechita. She'ena elohitzos nefesh. The stretching out of the foreleg is simply a sign of life departure as a result of natural causes and not a function of the shechita. But from this we could infer ha hechzira kshera. Notice we've dashed underlined hechzira kshera, and three lines above this, we dashed on the kofafa, which was described as dvarim she'ein hamisa oisa, meaning that would be good. That would be a sign of a kosher shechita. So that which Shmuel taught above is really contained as an inference from our Mishnah. So what do I need Shmuel for? The Gemara answers, "E mimas nisin." Had I just had this Tanaic source, Hava Amina, I would have thought Davka Kagon Shahoisa Yoda Kfufa Upashta Vahodar Kaifala. That as far as the Mishnah is concerned, the only sign of life that would be acceptable to make the Shechita good would have been where the animal's leg had been folded in at the time of Shechita, stretched out, and then folded back in after the Shechita. Avo pshuta v'kofofsa lo. But had it been at the time of Shechita outstretched, and after the Shechita simply one directional folding in, would not have been sufficient. Komash molon, this is what I need Rav Onan to tell me, that is sufficient. The folding in is sufficient without a double movement. Meisvei. At this point, the Gemara will raise a question on Shitas Rav. Therefore, you notice just before the Meisvei we have a semicolon, so that you shouldn't think that the kasha is on that which was stated immediately beforehand. Meisvei, and we've also written between the lines, Kosha al Shitas Rav Bepirchus. So we have a source, as you can see, it is in a frame, as we frame all our Tanaic sources in Gemara markings. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, Goya Bishas Shchita Ein Ze Pirchus. Now, we saw the expression Goya on the top line, and we have a little arrow in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. If you align this arrow with the previous arrow, you will see what is being referred to. There, the term Goa appeared as one of Rav's examples of Pirchus. Here, Goa is taught, and the source says, Ein ze Pirchus. Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yossi, Omer Mishmo. Rabbi Lozer, the son of Rabbi Yossi, says in his name, Afilu Hitilo Rei, defecation, V'kishkisha Biznava, Ein ze Pirchus, or the wagging of a tail, is not Pirchus. So we have dashed underlined in this source the key expressions. You have Goa and Hitila Rei. In this source, both are taught Ein. We've double underlined the Ein for emphasis purposes. That Ein ze Pirchus, whereas above Rav said that those do constitute Pirchus. Kasha Goya Agoya. This creates a contradiction, if you will, or a problem with regard to Goa. Goa was a sound that an animal makes as it's being shechted, and the kasha reya re, and as far as defecation is concerned, that also appears to be in contradiction to what Rav said. The Gemara answers, goya agoya lo kasha, the issue of goa, on the one hand, according to Rav, yes, Pirchus, and the source saying not, is not a problem. Ha da avikola, ha da amikola, if it's a thick type sound, a deep sound, that is Pirchus. That's what Rav's din. If it was a faint sound, that is what Oni call a faint sound, a weak sound. That's what the source was saying, that it does not suffice as Pirchus. Rei a rei nami lo kasha. As far as the issue of defecation is concerned, that's also not a point in contradiction. Kan bishoy seses. if it's a type of defecation that's, let's say, a liquidy release that's dribbling out or falling out very close by, that is not pirchus. That's not a sign of a sufficient sign of life to machshir the shechita. Kan b'matrezes, if it spurts out at a distance, that is a sign of the animal having had life till the point of the shechita completion. As we continue in the Gemara, we continue with the general topic of pirchus, and we have also a topic heading and structural note that accompanies what we are about to learn. You can see that we have diamonds, one of our series markings, and as you skim down the page, you can see three diamonds as you get down to the bottom. And we've noted in the outside margin, under the Nosei Mivneh note, the diamond is featured. Three deos, mosai tzrichim liros es ha-pirchus. At what point does one have to see the pirchus when shechting the mesukenes? Klomar beisu shlav shel ha-shechita. Which stage of the shechita is it important for us to notice the pirchus? And as we skim down the page using our pre-marked Gemara, you notice Rav Chisda, and he speaks about the pirchus being necessary to be be'emsa shechita. You can see there's a squiggle underline under the expression pirchus shamru, and this you will see each time. And there's also a dashed underline under the stage that he requires. So Rav Chisda says be'emsa shechita. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok mentions that the pirchus must be at betchilas shechita. You notice that at the second diamond, the dashed underline expression betchilas shechita, and second line from the bottom, you notice Rava mentions that pirchus must be besof shechita, at the end of the shechita. So you have middle, beginning, and end, and of course these are different levels of, let's say, of leniency and stringency. Because if you say that the pirchus is sufficient for it, it is sufficient at the beginning of the shechita, and that would be a leniency, that you don't have to see a life sign at the end as well. It's sufficient if it's the beginning of the shechita. And that shechita that requires that that you have to see it at the end of the shechita, that would be a stringency. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Rav Chisda, Pirchus she'omru besof shechita. The pirchus sign that we require is besof shechita. My besof shechita. What do you mean by that? Be'emtza shechita. My intention is to say that in the middle of the shechita, I would like to see the pirchus sign lafuke tchilas shechita dolo, to the exclusion of a sign of a life at the beginning of the shechita. That would not be sufficient. So Rav Chisda is going on record as saying the pirchus that's required must appear not at the beginning, that would not be sufficient, but in the middle of the shechita, that would be enough. Om Rav Chisda mino amino lo, from where do I know this? And we can point out ahead of time that each one of these shechitas will address this issue of mino amino lo, from where does each one know what he is saying. So Rav Chisda points out disnan, the following Tanaic source, behema dako sheposhto yodo velo hichzira psula, a light cattle that was misukenis, was deathly ill, and was shechted, and it stretched out its foreleg, did not withdraw it, that is not sufficient. Amos, at what point are we saying? Ilemo besof shechita, if this took place at the end of the shechita, in other words, the shechita was completed, and the animal stretched out its foreleg, are you telling me that that would not be an acceptable sign of pirchus? Kol hechi techi v'tezel, how long do you expect the animal to continue living? The Rashi, you can see across from here, says kol hechi techi v'tezel, the la'achar sheshachta lo tiski b'pshitas yad b'lo kvifa v'chozra b'tmiha. Are you saying that without The Rashi that we just read, could you just read the last part again? Because the Shita Mekubetzis, he takes out the word V'chozra. He says, Bepshita Siad Balok Fifa, is that not sufficient? Of course, if you have an animal that you finished the Shita and you see it stretching its leg out, that would be a good sign. That's a sign of life. How long do you expect the animal to show life signs? So if the Mishnah is telling us that Pashta Yoda is not good, it couldn't be so late into the story. Elolav be'emtza shchita. It must be that the Pashta Yoda is not a sufficient sign, that is because we're talking about emtza shchita. Therefore, when we speak about the Pirchus signs that we require, we're talking about signs that we want to see the Emsa Shchita, and stretching out the Emsa Shchita is not good enough. Omale Rava, Li'olam Besov Shchita. Rava disagrees with what was just said and says that the insufficiency of stretching out foreleg is true even after the Shchita. Sha'ani Omer, Kol She'ena Oisekein Besov Shchita. Any animal that does not, let us say, stretch out and fold back in, if it doesn't stretch out and fold back in, b'yodua shenishmos netula heimena kodem lachein, then that would be a sign that it died before the end of the Shechita. So as far as Rava is concerned, the stretching out of the leg, even at the Sof Shechita, at the end of the Shechita, this would not be a sufficient sign. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Omar Pirchus Shamru B'tchilas Shechita. Pirchus that is required to allow the Shechita of a Misukenes, this Pirchus is sufficient if it's demonstrated at the beginning of the Shechita. Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Mino Amin Olah, where do I know this from? This none. Again, the following Tanaic source. Omar Rav Shimon Hashochei Balayla, a Shechita taking place at night, ulamochar motzuk solim leim dam, and the next day you find the walls filled with blood, kshera. The Shechita is good, shezinka ulchavidas rabolozer. It's a sign that the animal did zinka. Zinka is a spurting of blood. And according to the Tana Rebelozer, the spurting of blood is a sign that it had sufficient life in it through the slaughtering and didn't die prior to that. The Omar Shmuel Kosli Beis Shechita Shaninu, and Shmuel points out that the expression walls that was in the Mishnah is a reference to the walls of the neck. In other words, the neck was full of blood, not the walls of the room in which the Shechita took place. So what are we seeing? We're seeing what have we described? A nighttime Shechita, so that you don't see any other movements at night. There's no light. The next morning, you notice that the neck is filled with blood. According to this source, that is a good sign. That's a sign of Pirchus. So now, at what point do we require the Pirchus sign? E amres bishlama betchila shchita shapir. If you say that it is sufficient to have a Pirchus sign, in this case, zinuk, the spurting of the blood, at the beginning of the shchita, so then we have a sufficient sign of Pirchus. Elo e amres besof shchita. If you say that, in this case, the zinuk is required to have taken place specifically at the end of the shchita, well then, when this was shechted at night, could you tell when it took place? Could you say definitively that it took place at the end of the Shechita? No, you can't say that, because there was no light. You couldn't have seen when the spurting took place. And if you are going to insist on self shita, then leichus duma betchila shita zinka, then you ought to suspect that the spurting of the blood in this nighttime shita may have taken place at the beginning, and that would not be sufficient. And yet it says that zinuk, the spurting of the blood, is sufficient to machshir this nighttime shita. So it must be that signs of pirchus are sufficient even if it happens at the beginning of the Shechita. The Gemara now attempts to rebuff this particular conclusion, and in order to follow the give and take in the Gemara, we will be using a triangle marking, but the triangle as you go on will be assuming two positions, sometimes with the point facing up, and that represents a question, an attempt to rebuff the answer, and with the point facing down, that will be a response. So the Gemara says, "Well, v'dilma shiny zinuk de'odif." It could be that from this we're not going to conclude a general rule regarding pirchus that at the beginning is sufficient, but that zinuk is different. That zinuk is a sign of a sign of extreme life, and therefore even if it takes place at the beginning, it is sufficient. Because if an animal is able to do zinuk, that is a sure sign that it had life to it. Life to it, namely, that it did not die prior to the Shechita. But other signs must take place later in the Shechita. The Gemara asks, Umi Adif? Could you possibly say that zinuk is a strong sign? Vatnan, Rebbe Elazar Omer, Daya im Zinka. Rebbe Elazar says that it's enough if an animal did zinuk. And from the fact that it says Daya, it shows that it's not a very strong sign, and that it's enough if it did merely this. So the Gemara says, nevertheless, Kal mi derabon Gamliel. Zinuk is in fact a weaker sign from that which Rabbi Gamliel requires. He requires foreleg and hind leg movement. The odif midrabbanan, but it's a stronger sign than that of the Rabbanan, who said yad or regel. So being that the zinuk is in fact a stronger sign than that which the Rabbonon require, it could be that other pirchus would not be sufficient if it's at the beginning of the Shechita. So the fact that zinuk is a stronger sign of life, and that if it takes place at the beginning of Shechita, that shows that it's a good pirchus, but other kinds of pirchus would have to take place later than just at the beginning. Omar li samo bar chilkoi. Akshi bo avua debar abuvram. Viamrilo achvo debar abuvram. We are now going to raise a kasha on that which was just said. Just prior to this point, and in other words, let's say structurally, this will be a response to the kasha that had been just raised, and we're going to refer to this as a long point, but in effect, it's also a repudiation of the question that had just been asked. We had dashed underlined the odif midrabbanan phrase, indicating that maybe zinuk is in fact a stronger sign than that which the Rabbonon speak about, the yad or regel. And coming off of that, we would end up saying that other signs of pirchus would have to take place later in the Shechita, and that at the beginning it would not be sufficient. To this, we raise an objection and show that zinuk even according to, even relative to what the Rabbanan require, Zinuk is not a stronger sign. So we have Avua Debar Abuvram asking, Umi de Rabbanan mi Odif, is it accurate to say that the Zinuk is a stronger sign of life than that which the Rabbanan speak about? V'hotnan, we have the following Tanaic source, in which it says, V'chachomim omrim, ad shetefarches oy biad oy beregel, that there is not sufficient pirchus until it does a movement of yad, foreleg, or regular hind leg. Rabbonon ahe kaimu. The Rabbonon in this source are a reaction to whom? E lemo ad Rabbon Gamliel. If you were to think that they are a reaction to Rabbi Gamliel, now Rabbi Gamliel requires more than the Rabbonon. He requires yad and regel movement, foreleg and hind leg post shechit of movement. Linguistically, this should have said kevon shepirchasa mi boyale. The Chachomim, if they were a reaction to Rabbi Gamliel, then in Hebrew it would have been more accurate to say Kavon, since it did Pirchus, since it did this, which is an indication not as much as the previous opinion required. Elo pshita ad Rebbe Elazar. Rather, it's obvious that the Chachomim are a reaction to Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar spoke about Zinuk. Now, the Rabbanan said that in reaction to Rebbe Elazar, the Rabbanan said that Pirchus is not accomplished until it does Yad or Regel. Now, the E Odif, if Zinuk was a stronger sign of life, then my Ad, what did the Rabbanan mean when they said until it does Pirchus of Yad or Regel? It would have been more accurate for them to say since, or in other words, using the word Kivon. But they didn't say that. They said until it does Pirchus of Yad or Regel, indicating that their sign is theirs is a stronger sign or a more demanding sign than Zinuk, indicating that at this point then we can see also from the markings that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok was what he pointed out would be a sufficient proof, a sufficient source for what he said, and that the Gemara's initial objection of Vedilma Shaini Zinuk Dodif, and I'm referring to the first triangle expression, that is simply not accurate to say that Zinuk is a strong sign and hence sufficient for it to appear at the beginning of the Shechita. But rather, no. Zinuk is not a stronger sign of life than any of the other things, and since we saw that Zinuk is a sign of Pirchus for a nighttime Shechita, and there, since at the time of the Shechita we couldn't have seen anything, it must be that the Zinuk having taken place even at the beginning of the Shechita, and this in fact, like according to the Maskon of the Gemara, Zinuk in fact is a weaker form of life demonstration than any of the other Shechitas in the immediate vicinity. And even with this weak sign of life, it is sufficient if it happened at the beginning of the Shechita. Hence, Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchok rests his case. Omar Rava, Pirchus Shamru, Besof Shechita. Rava, and we had seen Rava speak up earlier in the Gemara. We have a little arrow. We have this, we'll call this a star, rather, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You notice a star, and this can be paralleled with the star that appeared higher up on the page, where Rava made his comment. Rava says, Pirchus Shamru Besof Shechita. Pirchus that is required as a sign of life departure as a function of the Shechita when Shechting in Mesukenes, this sign, this movement, must take place at the end of the Shechita. Omar Rava, Mino Amin Olah. From where do I know that? Desanya, we have the following source. The following source features a list of halachas that describe what is acceptable as a sacrifice? What kind of korbanos are, we could say in the negative, what kind of korbanos, what kind of animals would not be acceptable to bring as a sacrifice? So the pasuk says, shor o kesev. It goes on to say, and if you follow in this source the quotation marks, you are in effect reading the pasuk, where it says, shor o kesev o eiz ki valeid shivas yomim tachas imo. Now, the pasuk is broken down into various points or examples that represent exclusions, things that are not acceptable as sacrifices. We, though, are going to be zeroing or focusing on one of these, which will be relevant to our discussion. So, the pasuk having said, shor o kesev, the word oi is an extra word, and it's there to prat l'kilayim, to exclude an animal that's a crossbreeding of, let's say, sheep and goat. Oi eis, the pasuk mentions o eis, that's prat l'nidme. That's to the exclusion of an animal that was born from two of the same type parent, two goats, let's say, and the offspring, though it came from two parents that were a goat, goats, it looks like a sheep. That's a nidme. Ki ivaleid, prat liyotze doifen. The pasuk describes an animal that is born meaning naturally, to the exclusion of a cesarean delivery. It may be pointed out that a cesarean delivery might take place in the event that a pregnant animal toward the end of its pregnancy died. There is a chance that the vlad is still alive, and that can be determined by doing a cesarean delivery and thereby revealing a live offspring. And the pasuk is telling us that even though it's a live offspring, nevertheless it will not be acceptable as a sacrifice. Shivas yomim prat l'mechuser zman. This is telling us that an animal prior to its completion of 7 days of life will not be acceptable as a sacrifice. Tachas imo prat liyosom. And now this is what we are going to be focusing on. We're to the exclusion of a yosom. A yosom in human context would be an orphan. So we're talking about a yosom as far as an animal is concerned. The Gemara wants to know, hai yosom hechidomi. What are the circumstances behind this animal being categorized as a yosom? E lemo dilidise ime vehodar mesa. If you're talking about an animal that was born and soon after the birth the mother died, well, would that be reason for excluding it or excluding it from the realm of korban acceptability? Is the mother expected to live on forever? Here you have a case where the mother was pregnant, it gave birth, and after it gave birth, it died. Does it matter to us if the mother died a minute after it gave birth, or 5 years, or 50 years after it gave birth? That should be of no concern to us. So that is not the case of Yasam. Ella, rather, maybe, de Mesa, the mother died, v'hoder yilid say, and then it gave birth. It gave birth. Well, how can it give birth after it died? Well, through a cesarean delivery. Well, if that were the case, I don't need the expression of tachas imo to preclude that. Miki yivoleid nafka. That, the case of the cesarean birth, was already precluded through the expression ki yivoleid. Elopshita. Rather, what is the case that Yosom is describing? Ze piresh lemisa veze piresh lechayim. Namely, in the middle of the birth, the mother died. So that as the mother was dying, this offspring was gaining life. The Rashi. Rashi says, Ze Piresh Lamisa, Imoi, the mother went off to death. Klomar bishas misasa yolda, as the mother was dying, it was giving birth. Derech harechem, meaning through the natural birth canal. Vashmini kro deboinen chius ad gemar leida ulaachar leida meat. The pasuk is therefore telling us that in order for it to be acceptable as a sacrifice, the mother has to demonstrate life to the completion of the birth and a few seconds after that. Ve'iloi, and if the mother doesn't demonstrate life till after its giving birth, havilei yosom, then the offspring would be categorized as a yosom. De'al korche haytachas imo v'mute chaya be'emtza leida. The expression tachas imo has to be coming to exclude a case of a mother being alive in the middle of the birth, umesa bigmar leida osi, and it's coming to tell us that even though the mother was alive in the middle of the leida, but since it died at the completion of the leida, in other words, as at the moment that the offspring emerged, the mother died, that would not be acceptable as a korban. The Torah wants the mother to live a second or two after the birth is completed. That's as far as korban acceptability. But what we want to do is tie that into our topic of pirchus. E amris bishlamo bo'inon chiyusa besoif leida. If you say that the Torah has an expectation that there has to be a sign of life at the end of the birth, at the completion of the birth, hainu de itzterich kro limuti, I therefore understand that I need the pasuk of tachas imo to say that if it doesn't demonstrate life at the completion of the birth, the offspring is unacceptable. Elo I amris lo bo'inon chiyusa besof leida. But if you say that you don't have to have a sign of life at the end of the birth, and rather it died in the middle of the birth, and the offspring had to be delivered derech doifen, then lomo lei, what do I need the pasuk of tachas imo for? Miki yivoleid nafka, that would have been determined as being unfit for a korban from the expression ki yivoleid. Therefore, the Torah is describing something other than an animal having died in the middle of the birth, thereby necessitating derech doifen. Tachas imo is excluding a new case, namely a case where it was alive be'emtza leida, and thereby enabling the leida to take place in a natural form without a cesarean birth. And since the mother didn't last a moment or two after the birth, and rather died at the completion of the birth, it is labeled a yosom. From this, we extrapolate, and you can see in the Rashi how this is done. Rashi is in Dibor Maso Lomo Likra. What would I need the pasuk of Tachas Imo for if we were talking about a case of it dying in the middle of birth? Because if the mother died in the middle of the birth, the offspring would have had to be delivered through a cesarean section. A cesarean birth. Ela, shma mina, rather, we conclude, kol milsa debo bo rabbonon chiyusa, anything that the rabbonon require signs of life, bo inon shie chiyus begmar delay, the sign of life must be exhibited at the completion of whatever. And it's at this point that we're tying in the issue of psul korban to our topic of pirchus. Just like with regard to the acceptability of a korban, there must be a demonstration of life after the birth of the offspring in order for the there must be a demonstration of life on the part of the mother in order for the offspring to be acceptable. So too, with regard to Shechita, there must be a demonstration of life at the end of the Shechita, after the Shechita is completed, in order for the Shechita to be considered a good Shechita as far as a Mesukenes is concerned. Omar Rava, Hilchasa ki ha masnisa. Rava says that the halacha shall follow that which is taught in the following Tanaic source. We've underlined in this source Behema Daka, later we've underlined Gasa, and also Oif, three kinds of creatures and their respective Pirchus requirements. Behema Daka, Sheposhta Yoda, Velo Hichzira, Psula, a sheep or goat, a light cattle, that extended its arm without folding it back in, would be unacceptable. Mere extension of arm is not enough. Bamed v'amurim biyad. This idea of mere extension is not sufficient. That's with foreleg. Avol beregel, but with regard to hind leg, bein poshta v'lo kofafa, whether it extended without folding in, bein kofafa v'lo poshta, or it fell folded in an extended leg without re-extending it, kshera, that is a good, it's a kosher shechita if it was able to do these things. When, with regard to the hind leg, a one-directional movement would be enough. Bamed v'murim bedaka. That which we've just taught is only with regard to the light cattle. Avol pegaso, when you're dealing with heavy cattle like cows and oxen and bulls, bein biad bein beregel, whether it be foreleg or hind leg, bein poshto lo kofa, bein kofa lo poshto, kshera, whether it be a one-directional movement, either extending or merely folding in, everything would be okay. So when you're dealing with a behema gasa, the pirchus requirements are much more relaxed. In other words, no differentiation between foreleg and hind leg, and no differentiation between the direction in which the movement takes place. The oif, and when it comes to pirchus for a bird, afilu lo rifrif ela gapo, velo kishkesh ela znovo, hare ze pirchus. Refrafe as gabo would be a type of fluttering a movement of its back, or a wagging, or a shaking of its tail. That would be sufficient. The Gemara asks a question here regarding the psak of Rava. Rava had to issue, and you notice before this Tanaic source with underlined Rava's name, he issued a formal legal ruling. He paskined. The Hilchasa is like what's taught in this source. The Gemara wants to know, why was it necessary for Rava to offer a formal legal ruling when in fact all of the information that's contained in this source is alluded to in our Mishnah? And our Mishnah is an unnamed Mishnah. It's a Stam Mishnah. And as such, it is authoritative. So once I have the authority of a Stam Mishnah, of what necessity, what did I gain by having Rava coming and issue a formal legal ruling on that which was already implied by our Stam Mishnah? The question here lasts a few lines, and we've indicated this with a long question marking that you can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. My Komash Malon, what is Rava telling us through his legal ruling, through his psak? Kulhu Tanini. All of that which Rava taught is contained in our Mishnah, plus inferences therefrom. Behema Daka Sheposhtu Yoda V'lo Hechzira Psula. A light cattle that extended its leg and didn't fold it back in is unacceptable. It's an unacceptable movement to constitute a pirchus, which would legitimatize the shechita of a mesukenes. Why is this insufficient? And the Mishnah says she'eino ela hotzoas nefesh. It's simply the sign of it's a sign that would accompany even natural death, thereby not a sure sign that its death was a result of the Shechita. And in this source we can infer Yad in, the Poshto Yoda as being insufficient is in, means yes, is true with regard to foreleg, regelo. But as far as hind leg, what is said here is not the case. namely, that with regard to a regel extension, if the animal stretched out its regel, its hind leg, that would be sufficient. And dako in gasolo, and that which this source teaches as far as outstretching is insufficient, that's only true with regard to a dako, as the Mishnah said. The same would not apply to a gaso. So these, all the differentiations that Rava pointed out by paskening like the Tanaic source that he quoted, is really all contained through inferences from our Stam Mishnah. The Gemara answers, there is a difference though. If it's derichole de lo tanan, our Mishnah did not speak about the pirchus required for an oif, for a bird. And that is included in the source that Rava cited above. Hence, what Rava accomplishes is he shares with us a ruling concerning pirchus by oif. Before going on in the to the next Mishnah, we have a topic heading that accompanies this sukkah. The Nosei, Yisrael Hashoche Behemo Avur Akum Shehu Habaylim Shel Behemo. We'll talk about a Jew who slaughters an animal for a Gentile who owns the animal. The Jew is not the owner, the Gentile is the owner, and the Gentile in this case is someone who is an idol worshipper. Haim Machsheves Hagoy Yochol Hashpia Al Hashchita. Can the thoughts that the owner, this Gentile owner, have while the Shechita is taking place have any effect? More specifically, we're referring to a Gentile who happens to be an idol worshipper. If he imagines or he intends that the Shechita being done by the Jew shall be a Shechita for idolatrous purposes, would that constitute, or that make this a Shechita l'shem avodah zarah? After all, the one who's doing the actual slaughtering is not having these incorrect, or we'll call them these horrible thoughts. It's only the outside owner, the owner who is not actively doing the shechita, is having these thoughts. So, turning to the Mishnah, Hashochei le'ovei kechavim, shechita suk sheira. The Tanakhama says that the Shechita is acceptable even though the owner is an idol worshipper. Rebbe Elazar posel. Rebbe Elazar says that this Shechita will not be acceptable. Omer Rebbe Elazar, Afilu shochto le'echo le'vikichove mechatsa koveit shelo psula. Even if the Shechita was for the benefit of the goy, of the idol worshipper, to eat a part of its one of its inner organs, the chatzer kaveh, the whole animal is pusul. Shestam machshavas evikichavim lavodis kachavim. The standard thoughts of an idol worshipper are for idolatrous purposes. Omar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. He does not see any. He does not see the owner, this Gentile owner, as having the ability to affect the Shechita whatsoever. He says, "Kal v'chomer hadvarim." Using kal v'chomer logic, he says, "Uma b'mokim shemachshava poselas v'mukdoshim." Mind you, in the realm of sacrifices, in the Beis Hamikdash, a realm that is sensitive to expressed, let's say, to mind mindsets or thoughts. In other words, in the realm of kochim, we know that a machshava psula can ruin a korban. Yet, ein hakol helich elo achar ha'oved. As far as who can have an effect on the sacrifice as a result of wrong thoughts, that goes only according to the one who is actually doing the sacrificial service. Not the owner of the sacrifice, but the Kohen who is processing it. Mokoim she'ein machshava poiseles b'chulin. A realm in which machshavas do not have an effect. For example, in the slaughtering of the mundane, of the common meat, Eino din shelo yehei hakol holech elo achar hashochet, then all the more so, the only one who could possibly have any effect is the one who is doing the service itself, and not the owner. Hani Tanoi, the Tanakamo and Reb Elozer. These Tanoim, namely the first two Tanoim of our Mishnah, not Reb Yossi, but the first, the Tanakamo Reb Elozer, who give credence or strength to the Machshava of the Goy, the owner, even though in the Mishnah we don't see how the we don't see immediately how the Tanakama holds by this, but this will become clear as we go along. In other words, once we find out what the reason for the Tanakama is, who's Machshir the Shechita, we will discover that in principle he agrees with Reb Elozer that the Machshava of the owner could have an effect. So based on that idea that in theory the machshava of the owner is of significance, even according to the Tanakama, we can say that the Tanakama and Reb Elozer, Hani Tanoi, the Gemara says, Islahu de Rebbe Eliezer Rebbe Yossi, they both subscribe to Reb Elozer Rebbe Yossi's teaching. Tesanya, Omer Reb Elozer Rebbe Yossi, Shamati Shaba'ilim Mefaglim, I've heard that in the realm of sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash, the incorrect mindset of the owner of the korban, even though he is not actually servicing it, his mindset could result in the korban becoming pigul. A simple illustration of that would be someone who owns an animal brings it as a sacrifice. While the animal is being sacrificed, the owner has an intention of eating the meat at the wrong time, beyond the time limit. That would create pigul. So both of the Tanoim, the Tanakama and Reb Elozer, agree that the owner, in principle, could have an effect. Mihu, Tanakama Savar, the Tanakama in our Mishnah, who is Machshir, the Shechita of the Gentiles' Korban, the Shechita being done by the Jew, the Tanakama holds, Tanakama Savar, Isham ine dechoshev in ilo lo stam machshev zavikovim lo vodeskovim lo aminan. The Tanakama holds that if we heard the owner express an idolatrous intent, then the shechita would be ruined. However, if we didn't hear the owner express idolatrous intent, we do not ruin the shechita that's done by the Jew. And why is that? Because the Tanakama feels we do not apply, or we don't hold from a principle others hold from, that stam machsheva zevichovim lezichovim, that the assumed mindset of a Gentile, of an idol worshipper, is for idolatry. Therefore, if we don't say that there is an assumed mindset like that, then the shechita done on behalf of the Gentile is a good shechita. However, if we hear him explicitly saying that he intends it to be for an idol, that in fact would ruin it. But otherwise, we are not going to work with an assumption that he has such an intent. Reb Elozer Sofar, Reb Elozer was more stringent, says, Afagav delo shamine dechoshiv, even if we don't hear the Gentile say or express idolatrous intentions, nevertheless, stam machshev zavikachovim labodis chachovim amrinan. We do say that the assumed mindset of the owner, idol-worshipping owner, is for idolatrous purposes. Therefore, even if I don't hear him, he probably expressed such an intention. He is assumed to have expressed idolatrous intentions. The also Reb Yossi Lemeimar, Reb Yossi comes along and says, Afagav the Shamine the Choshev, even if we heard the Gentile owner express idolatrous intentions, that will not have a negative effect on the shechita. Ze mechashev ve ze oved lo amrinan. We do not say that while one is doing the actions, someone else can have thoughts. Can meaning can in the sense of have of thoughts that will affect. So as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, the thoughts of anyone other than the one who is doing the actual work, in this case the shechita, his this outsider's or the non-oveid's machshava will be of no consequence. Ika diamri. Now we have a second lashon, a second version of the presentation of the tanoim, and this is presented in a more lenient fashion. B'jishamine dechoshiv pligi. According to this version, the Tanakama and Reb Elazar will be arguing even in a case where we heard the owner, the Gentile owner, express idolatrous intentions. To contrast this with the first Lashon, in the first Lashon, if we heard the owner express idolatrous intentions, then even the Tanakama would agree that the Shechita is no good. According to this version, the Tanakama will hold it is kosher. Let's read that again in the Gemara. Iko de'amri, another version of this Tanaic presentation. B'deshamine de'choshev pliki, where we heard the Gentile express idolatrous intentions, we have a machlokes. Tanakama sovar, the Tanakama holds, ki amrinon zemechashiv ze oved, when is it that we accept the possibility of one person having thoughts or expressing wrong intentions while someone else is doing the activity? Hani mili b'fnim. That is true with regard to things taking place inside the Beis HaMikdash. Avol b'chutz lo. But as far as things taking place outside the Beis HaMikdash, like our case, the shechting of an animal on behalf of a goy, we don't say that one can, that A can think at while B is doing the activity. Chutz mipnim loy yalfinon. Principles that apply in the Beis HaMikdash, we don't extend to that which takes place outside the Beis HaMikdash. That's chutz mipnim, the outside from the inside, we do not learn. The also Rabbi Elazar lemeimar, at the top of Lamed Tes, we see Rabbi Elazar comes along and says, yalfinon chutz mipnim. We do learn the way to view the outside the Beis HaMikdash from the way we look at inside the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, if in the Beis HaMikdash, ze mechashe veze oved, so too when it comes to outside the Beis HaMikdash, ze mechashe veze oved. And hence, the Gentile can have an incorrect mindset, while the Jew is doing the actual slaughtering, and the Gentile's mindset will ruin the korban. The also Rabbi Yosi lemeimar afilu b'fnim nami, even with regard to in the Beis HaMikdash, ze mechashiv ze oved lo aminon. This idea of the owner of a sacrifice having an incorrect machshava and that would thereby affect the korban, we don't say such a thing. As far as Rabbi Yosi is concerned, when the pasuk says hamakriv lo yechashev, the word makriv is the Makriv is not a reference to the owner, but the one who was literally offering the korban. Only his machshava will have an effect, but not the machshava of someone who is not doing the actual service. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.